Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It is the second year for the event called Southwest Florida Sustains, a regional seafood experience, which is being held on Fort Myers Beach. The focus is on the culinary arts at the beach, with a side dish of promoting sustainable seafood from the Gulf. That seafood will be highlighted in dishes from restaurants like Chloe's Seafood and Steaks, Charlie's Boathouse Grill, Pinchers on the Beach, Doc Ford's Rum Bar and Grill, and Fishtail Waterfront Dining, and more. While visitors are nibbling on the fruits of the Gulf, they also get to hear from a renowned marine researcher who's visiting as the event's keynote speaker. Dr. Kevin Main is the Senior Scientist and Program Manager of Marine and Freshwater Aquaculture at Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium. She joins us now by phone. Hello, Dr. Main. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And we're joined in studio by Captain Justin Polakis from Fishtail Marina, who has environmental certification in sustainable fishing. Thanks for coming in, Justin.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are talking about sustainable seafood, and you can become part of the conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I want to start with the deep philosophical question here. What is sustainable seafood? And Dr. Main, I'm going to start with you. How is sustainability defined?
Well, sustainability is one of those words that has a lot of definitions. It just depends on who you're talking to. And so it is a difficult term to define because you can talk about it in terms of so many different things. But in the case of seafood, what I would say sustainable seafood is food that is either produced using methods that have a limited impact on the environment or that are fished in a way that does not result in a decline in the available resource or protects the local fishery. So that's probably a good definition that crosses both boundaries.
And Justin, what does sustainable mean to you?
It's a good question. I have to agree with Dr. Main about providing to make sure that we still have that down the road, something to eat, something to have, and something to protect. For a long time, the biggest resource in Estero Bay where I work has been fishing, and it's been a fishing culture. I remember being very young and experiencing that, and that's something that I hope that I have for my children and down the road.
So you want to keep it going for future generations.
Absolutely.
And also for next month's meal, right? So Dr. Main, you work in aquaculture research specifically. How much of what do you do, how much does that have to do with sustainable ways to raise and harvest marine life for food?
Well, our whole research effort here is based on developing land-based sustainable methods to produce seafood that have a limited impact on the environment to provide a high-quality, locally produced product to the marketplace. And that is such a huge issue. You know, even in Florida, 91% of the seafood that is consumed is imported. And so, you know, a lot of people think if they're eating seafood in a seafood restaurant that it's coming out of the bay, but a lot of it is coming from overseas because that's where the production is.
So a lot of people refer to it then as fish farming, and fish farming tends to get tagged with, when it's on land, just tilapia. Are you working with tilapia at all, or are you working with other fish?
No, I'm working. I am not working with tilapia. I'm working with marine fish, and my research, you know, I'm associated with Moat Marine Laboratory, so our work tends to be focused on marine species. And I've been developing the technology to produce local marine species using fish farming technologies. And so you can do the same thing on land and in the ocean in terms of production as long as you've got the right filtration present on the land-based systems.
So as far as aquaculture in the Gulf, is there anything actually happening in the Gulf in the way of aquaculture, or is the water too unpredictable there to make that kind of an investment?
Well, here in Florida, we do have some coastal aquaculture going on. A great example is up in both Cedar Key and Charlotte Harbor area, where they are farming clams. And so the biggest commodity produced in the field of aquaculture that's a food resource is clam farming, and we have a strong industry here. We're one of the biggest clam producers in the United States. So if you're eating clams in a restaurant, they are very likely being produced right here at coastal farms in Florida. And then the other area that's a wonderful opportunity but has yet to be developed is there has been an opportunity put forward through the Department of Commerce to allow the development of what we call offshore aquaculture. So that would be for this coast, the southwest coast of Florida. It would be at least 60 miles out in the Gulf of Mexico in order to get to deep enough water where you can put the cages in and be able to farm marine fish. But nobody is doing that yet. It's really something that I hope that we see developed in the next couple of years.
60 miles out, is that in international water?
It is out of the state waters, and so it is then governed by federal regulations. So I wouldn't say international, but it's federally managed fisheries.
Yeah, and that's a different bag of bureaucracy, I suppose, that would be need to be dealt with there. We have a phone call coming in from Lexi on Fort Myers Beach. Lexi, what would you like to ask?
Are tickets still available for Sustain?
Okay, that would be a question that would be probably for you, Justin. Do you know if there are tickets still available?
Yeah, absolutely. We still have tickets available. Tickets are $50. You can buy it online or at the site if you want to show up. We'll be hosting the event at Diamond Head Beach Resort on Fort Myers Beach. If you want to buy your tickets online, you can visit fmbarts.org, and you can go ahead and buy a ticket through there as well.
So you're going to have restaurants there that are representing with the local seafood?
Absolutely. We'll have local restaurants, like you mentioned, like Chloe's Seafood. We'll have Pinchers, Doc Ford's, and the new restaurant, Fishtail Waterfront Dining, Charlie's Boathouse, Wicked Dolphin Rum Distillery, Pointy Bell Brewing Company, and we'll have more as well.
So a lot of locals are going to be there, and the local homegrown smaller places too, not
yeah.
just the big ones. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, as a fishing captain, you're not dealing in the aquaculture so much, but you're dealing with wild populations. How long have you been a captain out there?
I've been a captain full-time for about 2 years now.
But you've been fishing out there, you said, since you were young?
Since I was a little boy.
What kind of changes have you seen over the years? Anything?
That's a really interesting question. My background, I'm a big history fan, and I remember hearing people talking about when the Estero Bay Aquatic Preserve was first designated back in 1966, and you hear people talk about the passion that they had. And to preserve what we had is great, because you look at places like Tampa or you look at places like Miami where you have a lot of seawalls being built up, and you lose a lot of the culture and a lot of the fishing that we have. Estero Bay does a great job. Our biggest recreational use is fishing and aqua sports. So it's a very big thing for the captains to make sure that we're being sustainable in our catch and release processes. We never take more than we really need from the Gulf or from the Back Bay. It gives fish populations a chance to reproduce. One thing that everybody always mentions is the water quality that we have down here, and that's something that we've been battling. There are a lot of local communities and organizers that are trying to fix that problem. But
yeah, and then we're having more releases down the Caloosahatchee because the Lake Okeechobee got full again, so they're letting that water go. And it's a little later in the season,
mm-hmm.
so it may not be as concentrated. I don't know. I can't really make that call. But do things like that concern fishermen out there in Estero Bay?
Oh, absolutely. Especially in like Sanibel and Pine Island Sound, but we do get it in Estero Bay as well. Our biggest resource down there, at least on my end, is we have a very large tourism population that comes to Fort Myers Beach to visit. And one of the biggest questions that people always ask us is, well, is the water safe to swim in? Is everything okay? How's the fish population? And so it can be a little bit of a struggle explaining to people that, yes, we're still doing good, but there are things that could be better as well.
That bad PR is definitely not good for the tourism.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're really dependent on. And Dr. Main, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. I know that you're working with aquaculture on land, but when you see things that kind of alter the chemistry in the water, in the bays and up around Pine Island, does that concern you with people wanting to set up things like aquaculture? For example, like a clam guy that I talked to a couple of years ago that went out of business in Pine Island area. Do things like that kind of make you nervous about those types of investments?
Well, that can be a real problem. And when you're working in the ocean, or out in the environment, you're subject to changes that can happen in that environment due to incoming water from sources that you can't control or just to weather patterns. And so that can affect your productivity. And I know exactly what you're talking about with the clam farmers down in that area. They've had a much more difficult time than the ones up in the Cedar Key area, mainly because that southern portion of the state is more impacted by red tides, which can affect their ability to harvest the clams. And so that can really make the difference between farmers being able to be successful and not. And so the key is we've got to find some successful models that will work so that we can expand production here in our country, and that's what we're working on.
So that's what you're doing. So you're creating a model and showing this is what works, this is the investments that's required to make it happen, and this is how we made it happen. And then people can then use your research to mimic that in a real live kind of a business situation?
Absolutely. And also, you know, we work together with industry as they try to develop those pilot scale farms and move it from the, I would call it commercial scale research. You know, we're really doing it at the same scale that the farms would be doing their production, but we are developing all the science around it so that once the farmers get into it, they can be much more successful. That's our goal.
And Justin, I wanted to ask you a question that I want to ask everybody that gets in front of me that knows anything about fishing in this area. I need to understand this because about a year ago I was in New York and I'm in Chelsea Market in Manhattan and I see grouper there from Southwest Florida for $16.99 a pound mm-hmm. in New York. It's impossibly expensive to find it for $16.99 even down here in Southwest Florida. Do you know anything about how the wholesale fish trade works that makes that kind of pricing happen?
I'm not sure. There's a whole big industry behind it where we were talking a little bit about it earlier where fake labeling of fish. It's a very hard topic to talk about. I'm not too familiar with the background of wholesale fish.
Okay, I didn't mean to put you on the stop. but it just it makes it hard for me because I want to eat local. And mm-hmm. Dr. Kevin Main, you were talking about trying to eat locally, but you can't sometimes eat locally if they're shipping everything that's gotten locally too far away. And that's obviously probably not your area of expertise. But maybe I'll ask you, Justin.
Yeah, that can be a real problem. And the main reason that it develops is that the distribution methods might not be in place to get that local seafood to the marketplace. And so really, you know, people have to set up networks with wholesalers in order to reach out to those people that have it, either fishermen that are bringing it into the dock or to producers that are farming it and make sure that that product is getting to them. And there's a movement underway right now to try to focus on that. Here in Sarasota this week, we have an event that's starting on Friday called Eat Local Week, and I think that's well in concert with the event that's going to be happening here in Fort Myers on Thursday, which is all about high-quality local seafood.
Yeah, and we have a locavore movement happening down here, but I feel like it seems to be challenging when it comes to seafood. Justin?
Absolutely. It is challenging to find it, say, if you were going to your local supermarket or finding it anywhere like that. But on the north end of Fort Myers Beach, our largest industry has been shrimping for a very long time. And there are still some shrimping companies that operate just off of Fort Myers Beach on San Carlos Island that if you go in there, if you know where to look, they will have fresh caught fish available there as well as fresh Gulf shrimp as well. It's just one of those things like we were talking about with Dr. Main where it's hard to find like a wholesaler that will sell that to local markets, still remain fresh instead of shipping it off to somebody who's going to pay a premium amount.
Yeah, exactly. And there's actually a guy up there that has grouper cheeks sometimes,
mm-hmm.
which are so hard to find. So hard, but they are a treasure. It's wonderful when you can find those. And Dr. Main, you did a lot of work with snook, it looked like, in some of your work that I was looking up before we came on the show. What can you tell me about the snook?
Well, what we've been doing here at Moat with snook is developing the aquaculture technology to produce fingerling fish for restoring the wild fish populations. And we have a research team at Moat that works in concert with the aquaculture group, my research group. And what they do is we produce the fish and then they work on the optimal methods for restoring the fish populations. And so they are looking at the habitats that are required, the optimal places and the size for those fish, what time of year works the best. So all of those key questions in making that successful, because you cannot farm snook in Florida. It's classified as a game fish and it's restricted.
It's very restricted. Justin, is snook hard to find in our area? Is it all over the place? Because I never find it in a store. You can't sell it, I guess.
No, it's one of those things that you actually have to go out with the captain or if you own your own boat to go out and catch yourself. You're never going to find it in a shopping mall or something like that. And on top of that, Florida's been very good about setting restrictions about when you can go and when you can't go to go catch snook. In fact, you have to have a permit yourself to go out and catch it and keep it. There is a season that you can go out.
When is that?
I'm not sure the exact dates. I know that we're coming into or coming out of a season now.
Okay. I've always been dying to try this snook, but I don't have a boat and I don't go fish. And I don't know any fishermen yet. But I would love to try this fish because apparently it's legendary. Have you had a snook?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Estero Bay is a great place to find them, especially this time. October is one of the best months to go fishing in Southwest Florida. So if there's anybody out there who's ever looking to get on the water, feel free. Come down to one of our marinas anywhere on Fort Myers Beach, and you're going to have captains that will go out there and catch this big game fish.
It's big. How big is it?
Oh, it's snook range anywhere from 20 inches to 35 to 40. They get very big, as well as our redfish that are here. You won't find the large bull redfish like you do in Louisiana, but they're an awesome fish to go out, try and catch. And there's also kind of a sense of pride when you catch a fish and you can bring it home, captain fillets it, and you can go and have something that you can't locally find.
I would feel proud. I think that would be great. And there's been a movement also talking about trash fish, where they're trying to encourage people to get those fish that are often overlooked by fishmongers and therefore also by fishermen because they can't sell them as easily. Do you see any fishermen going for those types of lesser-known species like, you know, tilefish, pompano, instead of the traditional grouper or snapper?
You won't see it too much. Definitely pompano is one thing that people are starting to recommend a lot to their clients. It's just an easy fish to – not an easy fish to go and catch, but it's a good, fun fight when you're bringing it to the boat.
Oh, it's a fighter.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And this is fun.
And it's so good to eat.
Exactly.
Pompano. What are some of the other lesser-known fish, Dr. Kevin, that you would suggest to – Dr. Main, I'm sorry – that you would suggest to people that are interested in doing something different from the traditional grouper or snapper?
Well, you know, a great fish to eat that's local and is near shore is mullet. And there's a great mullet fishery down in the Charlotte Harbor area as well as up in Cortez, Florida, for mullet. And what's nice about it is that many of the habitats that they're found in this area are sandy, and so they don't have that muddy taste to them. They actually have a wonderful taste. Another one is black drum and even red drum. Again, Justin already mentioned that, but that's a great eating fish and one that you can red drum. You can both farm and catch them in local waters. And so those are not things that are targeted for the commercial fisheries.
Do you foresee a future, Dr. Main, of aquaculture being a locavore movement as well, where not only being able to get locally caught wild fish, do you foresee a time when people are going to be able to get locally farmed fish?
Absolutely. In fact, that's where I think there's a strong niche for Florida producers to move into is smaller scale local farms. And the work that I've been doing has been focused around trying to develop multiple products that are being produced out of a single farm, a combination of fish and edible sea vegetables together, and you can sell both of those products into the marketplace.
I wonder how hard would a setup be for something like that? I mean, if somebody's wanting to how difficult would it be to set something up like that if somebody's looking to invest in having an aquaculture type of farm for marine fish?
Well, you know, it is more complex than freshwater fish production. The technology is a little more challenging. But the thing is that what we've been doing right now is working on what I'll call a modular system that will be able to be put into place in any kind of location. You don't have to be on the coast. You can be inland, and you can still farm them because some of the species, for example, red drum, is one that you can grow in low salinity conditions. And so you could, as long as you've got access to the starter fish or the fingerlings from a hatchery, then you can stock out your farm and do that at relatively low salinity. And so we're working on that technology. I'll be sharing about that when I speak on Thursday evening.
I think it'll be an interesting event to listen to you speak at. And that, again, is going to be happening at Diamond Head Beach Resort, and that is tomorrow. And if you're interested in more information or tickets, look at fmbarts.org, or you can always go to WGCU News to find some links to get more information about the story and also about how to attend the event. So we're going to have to wrap it up because we've run out of time, but I want to thank our guest, Dr. Kevin Main, and also captain of the fishing charter Justin, it was so nice to talk with you and ask you some of those tough questions. Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1 WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM NPR for Southwest Florida.